Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. It is the Sunday, December 5th edition of the show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And we have got so many things to discuss. Christopher, my gracious, what an insane day. A lot of dogs ended up winning outright, which is something that we do not usually see. Felica said before all of this that since the playoff went into effect, 2014, 23-1 straight up for favorites of 4 points or more. And we had several that did not only did not cover, but did not win outright. There is much to discuss in the world of college football. Let me go ahead and tell you, go to winningcureseverything.com. That is your one-stop shop. Everything you need to know about us, you can find over there. Everywhere that you need to subscribe, everywhere that you need to follow us on social media, go ahead and knock that out. winningcureseverything.com. If you have not already, please subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, which we've already got multiple people that are in the chat, and we certainly appreciate you guys. I had a feeling this would be a fun one this morning. If you've not subscribed to the podcast, please go ahead and do so. That is, we're thinking about maybe doing some podcast-only kind of stuff going forward. We'll see what happens with that. But with that said, leave a nice 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts. That certainly helps us out. Listen on Spotify. Listen on Google Podcast. Well, whatever your podcast app is, go ahead and knock that thing out. I do the BetUS College Football Show. Chris does the Bookmaker Review College Football Show. You can find the links to both of those in the description below. And the show is always brought to you by BetUS. It is America's top online sportsbook. You can find them at BetUS.com. Head over there and make sure that you get signed up, hooked up. We got a fun bowl season coming. Chris, let's start off with some of the news. Because, first off, this should be like the easiest top four that they've had, right? Like, is there really any questions?
We know the four.
It's just the order. Like, now we know
the four. We just need the order.
There you go. I'll go ahead and say this. Ball Python Love jumps in. He said, hello, Gary. Hello, Chris, et cetera. He did jump in and say, let's go Cincy, no Roll Tide. And I, of course, responded, how dare you. Let's see. Trevor Shackelford jumps in, said, go Blue. Be Smooth James. Casey, Live Ones Media. All sorts of people. So this is, let's see, anyone's bets go as badly as mine yesterday? Yes, I had some bad bets. Bad bets yesterday. Luckily, I was okay on the season. So yesterday was just a bad. I think I may not bet championship weekend going forward. It was that bad. Brent Venables appears to be the guy, Chris. I went on the show on Monday and said that I had been told that it's Venables, period. That there is really no other option. They're doing their due diligence, but that it would be Brent Venables at the end of the day. And this morning, of course, it's not official, it's whatever, but all of the big-name people that you would normally expect are saying that it's going to be Brent Venables at Oklahoma. Does that surprise you, that they would go a different direction than an offensive guy like Lincoln?
No, it doesn't surprise me, and I don't know that some of these ADs pay that much attention to this stuff. I think we in the media try to make storylines, and these guys are just trying to hire the right guy for the job. And I don't know that they care that the last guy that was really successful was a defensive guy. and his first head coaching job. And then we had an offensive guy and his first head coaching job. So now let's go to a defensive guy again. Like, I don't know that anybody pays attention to that when you're an AD. I think it's just so damn hard to hire somebody good.
I agree with you. And the rumors are, of course, are not necessarily rumors. It appears that it is a package deal. He's going to bring Jeff Lebby back to Oklahoma. Jeff Lebby, of course, the offensive coordinator under Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. And it's not super shocking. Lebby was one of the guys, I believe, when he was at Baylor, or maybe it was Texas Tech. I don't remember where he was, but he got caught spying on Oklahoma from the opposing sideline at one point. So it was questionable, but at the end of the day, Lebby went to school at Oklahoma. He played at Oklahoma going home. I mean, you can't fault a guy for doing that, especially if the money is going to be similar or more. So, Baylor, that's what it was. Gary said, Gary Lewis jumped in and said it was Baylor. So, yes, you know, it's not shocking to me that he would go back to Oklahoma, especially under a defensive coach that is going to somewhat give him free reign on the offense, I would believe. So, we'll see. That's kind of what Venables has done at Clemson. He was the DC for forever, and Dabo just let him handle the defensive side of the ball. I would imagine the same thing will go in here. Hires in an OC. He's going to let him handle the offensive side of the ball. So, yeah. The other news. So, all of this kind of came out Friday before the Pac-12 title game and during the Pac-12 title game, et cetera, et cetera. It appears that Miami is getting their ducks in a row. They are going hard after. It's not official yet, but it looks like it will be soon. Clemson's athletic director, Dan Radakovich, is possibly going to Miami, and him coming in, he's going to be the highest paid AD in the country, making, I think, $3 million or more per season, which is kind of crazy. But he's possibly bringing with him Mario Cristobal from Oregon. Now, none of this is confirmed. This is all rumor. Again, Cristobal played at Miami, has family that lives in Miami. He is Miami. Like, that's what he is. Miami is not what Oregon is in today's college football, but much the same way that we saw with USC, if they are prepared to make an investment into the program and really go after this thing, does that surprise you that Cristobal and old Dan from Clemson would make their way down to Miami?
I think it's surprising that they almost have a deal in place, or they're going hard after Dan and they still haven't fired Manny.
How shitty is this, by the way?
This is a job that's not open right now. Like, it is currently not open.
It's so ridiculous.
And they already have their next head coach, and this is not like a coach in waiting situation.
It's so awful.
I'm okay with behind the scenes doing what you got to do to kind of get a feel for who you're going. But once you have an idea, I've got a list of names. I'm comfortable with these names. All right. Then you fire your coach so that he can move on with his life. But leaving him sitting in limbo is just a shit thing to do.
Yes.
This school is proven to be just about as awfully ran as anything I can ever imagine. I mean, there are people at Tennessee and Knoxville that are laughing at Miami for how poorly this is going.
It's fairly ridiculous. You know, hey, Casey jumped in. What's up with the DB coach for Oklahoma recruiting for USC? There's a lot to that. We might hit that on the Tuesday show. But it's a compliance issue. I will tell you that. You can't work for one school and be recruiting for another without officially being on the job. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later. We got too much to discuss today. But yes, at Miami, we kind of saw USC doing this for a long time with Clay Helton, right? Like, they messing around behind the scenes. Texas kind of did it with Tom Herman. It was, you know, you're the coach, but if we can get this guy, you're probably not going to be the coach anymore. And that's just a shitty way to go through it, right?
I mean, I'm going to just flat ass tell you that Texas doesn't have a losing season under Herman this year.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Like, to not be able to go 6-6 in the Big 12 is an absolute shame.
They do have a win.
There's no excuses for that.
They do have a win over a conference champion this year. They beat Louisiana in week one. who is in the top 25, might be in the top 20 by the end of this. Eric jumped in and said, that's fine if you get the right OC and let it make decisions. That's talking about Matt Miller jumped in and said, Cristobal isn't a great coach. He's a great recruiter. That is true. And Eric said, that's fine if you get the right OC and let him make decisions.
I think Cristobal is going to end up a lot like Ed. I think he has potential to be really good. He also has potential for it to go off the rails in Miami.
Yes, 100,000%. You're right. Eric said Oregon insiders don't expect Cristobal to leave, but anything could happen. That's the thing. It would not surprise me if he goes back to Miami if they are willing to put a big investment into the program and prove it. Like, there's got to be a way. If you go out and get Clemson's AD, that's a pretty big investment. You're showing some proof. There's proof of concept there. If you don't get him...
How bad are things collapsing at Clemson right now?
Oh, my God.
Dabo is about to be exposed as the greatest fraud. People made fun of Ed O, and people called him a fraud for 2019. The veil is about to come off the face of Dabo and Clemson, because I've told you for a long time, I think you believe this too. I don't know this. I think Venables was the man holding that entire program up.
Most certainly the last two seasons. But it wasn't just that.
I think some of those championship years too.
Yeah, that's part of it. Like, he's always been built on great coordinators. Right, it's what it's always been. If he can go out and get some more,
but
really good,
it wasn't. He was always built on great coordinators. It was he's had this one coordinator his entire time there, and well, all he had to do was worry about the offense.
No, Brent was, they had somebody else before Brent. Pulling up the Wikipedia.
Not long.
He's been at Clemson for a minute since 2012. So, yeah.
Yeah, let's say Brent was there almost the entire time. Yeah, Dabo's been there, what, 12?
10? He's been there since 2008.
Like, oh, no. 2008. Then, yeah.
So we hired him in the 2012 season. Yeah, it's kind of since the championship started, yes. Yes.
He's been there basically Dabo's entire career, I think. And that's when the ship started to turn, because when Dabo first got there, they weren't great. It took a little while to, quote-unquote, build it. Well, who'd he bring in that started building it?
That you are not incorrect on that. So Casey said Clemson will bounce back, in my opinion, not because Dabo is a good coach, but because it's a big brand. Well, it's a big brand now.
They weren't a big brand before Brett.
Right. Like, they were not a big brand, like, at all. They were not even close. They were not one of the class of the ACC. They were just another school.
So, they're getting their ass kicked by South Carolina every year.
Matt Miller jumped in. As a UT fan, it wasn't about this year. Herman burned bridges and recruiting had plummeted. Recruiting was still actually fairly decent, but he just could not develop players, for one. And for two, yes, he burned all of the bridges necessary to be the coach at Texas. Like, all the booster and whatnot bridges, the boosters wanted him out. It wasn't to do with wins and losses. It was just he wrecked that thing.
Well, congratulations. Hey, you got your yes man. You got somebody who won't burn bridges for you. He also won't win football games. So
I told you that at the beginning of this season.
Yeah.
This is what happens
when you hire bootlickers. Okay. Oh. This is what happens when you hire people that just bend over and take it. All right. There's a reason they're willing to bend over and take it. They know they bring nothing to the table. They're not good.
Yep. Yep. You are not incorrect.
They're good at saying yes.
On top of that, so we talked about Clemson falling apart, all that good stuff. Tony Elliott, the OC, who, of course, had a terrible season. It looks like he's in the running for both the Virginia job and the Duke job.
That's so sad. That's so sad.
I don't know how that works, but
he's going to be terrible at both of them.
Eric jumped in, by the way, said Tom Herman to Oregon as OC.
Tom Herman's staying in the NFL. Yeah,
he said he's staying in the NFL. Now, he's just an analyst in the NFL right now, isn't he?
He will work his way up. This was his first year in the NFL. Yeah. NFL coaches, the NFL is a very tight-knit group, okay? It's kind of hard to break in there. There's a reason that all of the greats all have the same last name as former greats. There's just nepotism's a bitch in the NFL. All right.
It's true.
Trying to break into that. Yeah. I mean, it's just a hard thing to do.
Next topic here that I wanted to hit, Quinn Ewers leaving Ohio State after one season. He basically redshirted, didn't see the field at all. He's the $1 million man, left his high school in Texas a year early to go and collect them checks, and I cannot fault him for that. But he didn't play this season, and apparently, from what I have been told, because I tweeted this out on Friday and was like, what is going on in this sport right now? This everything is bananas. And I had multiple DMs from people that said, yo, this has actually been going on since like October. He got homesick. And I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense because he's a friggin' child. Like, he's 17 yeah. years old. What are we talking about?
Oh, no, he was the same age as a normal high school kid. He was the same age as a normal college freshman.
That's it. Right, but that's right. He's 18. That's right.
Because he was held back.
Yes.
He's the exact same age. Which that still happens, by the way. My first freshman year of college, I went away with no friends, went to a school where I didn't know a soul. And I struggled my first year a lot. I struggled a whole lot.
But now apparently he is going back to Texas. And it is between Texas Tech, which, whoa, Joey McGuire, what are you doing?
There's zero chance he's going to Texas Tech.
So,
zero chance the number one quarterback in the country and from that class is going to Texas Tech.
I would not say never on that.
Okay.
But we'll see. I'll say never. The other names, by the way, are
That's Texas, because you won't ever put yourself out there. You just want everything. Yeah, you just do nothing but take chalk. So, that's fine.
This is not talk. I think there's a very, very strong possibility that he goes to Texas Tech. Joey McGuire is so tied in down there, and he sees what's going on at Texas, and he sees what Texas A&M just went through. Yes, Jimbo is one thing, and you got a bunch of star players to play around with. I wonder what – I don't know what this kid is, right? I don't know what he – he went to Ohio State. That's the place that you're supposed to go and, like, work your way up. You can be a Heisman guy there. You can da-da-da-da-da. I just wonder, like, is he somebody that would prefer the small town life and Lubbock would fit, right?
I just don't think it's going to happen.
It may not, but we'll see. We'll see. Hey, Kevin Kelly, what the hell? I'm a little irritated about this. I don't know which direction this is going, and I tried to reach out to a bunch of people that might have any kind of intel on it. Nobody knows what happened. This was not like a school firing. This was not – he just like decided, okay, I tried my year, and we won our first two games, and we lost our last nine. We gave up no less than 50 points in all of the last nine games, and this was fun, but I'm out. That's basically what this amounted to, and I would have really liked to have seen this played out.
Yeah. The first guy through the wall is always going to be the guy to get bloody. Like that's just the way trying new things happens. I wonder the level of support he was getting at Presbyterian.
Well, I mean, we know what Presbyterian is. Like, there's no scholarship athletes. There's no.
Well, yeah, but the whole conference, there's no scholarship athletes. So right. It's not like they play in a division where everybody else has scholars and they don't. But at some point in time, if you're getting pressure from outside influences, people that run the school and run the athletic department to do things differently, then it's real easy to say, no, I'm not. You brought me in because I do this. It's going to take time for this to work. So you either can let me do this and try it, and then when it's done, let me go, or you can ride me and harass me and try to get me to change things. But
I'm not going
to change. I'm not doing that. I'll just leave on my own, and I'll go somewhere where I don't have to change.
Yeah, yeah. I would have liked to have seen it played out.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but alas, here we are. You ready to jump into some of these games?
Yeah.
Let's do this before the playoff announcement, because we'll be, of course, talking about that as it happens. It's supposed to be at 12:15 p.m. Eastern time. So let's start off with Alabama 41, Georgia 24 in the SEC championship game. Post-game win expectancy, Alabama 99%. Bryce Young, 26 out of 44, 421 yards, three touchdowns. I think the more surprising thing is that Brian Robinson played with a pulled hamstring and ran the ball 16 times for 55 yards. Like, I got no idea. Georgia got zero sacks. They looked confused. Like, once they got up 10-0, Alabama ran this crossing route that got Jameson Williams wide open, and and he burned those guys. You could tell he was so much faster than that secondary. And from there, Georgia was on their heels, and they could never get it back. John Metchie tore his ACL. He's going to be out of the playoffs. That is definitely not good. Alabama's offense was not nearly as explosive in the second half without him, but 24 second quarter points for Alabama. Give me your thoughts on this before we dive into, you know, some of the numbers.
Well, my first thought on this game was I find it funny that Saban credits the media and all the people that picked against them as yummy rat poison. I don't understand this.
Did you see? You get by the way, let me interrupt.
Hang on, no.
Did you see?
Damn it, Bryce Young? Let me finish.
All right, go ahead.
I love it how you get to suck dick for like 9 games. Okay, offensively, you don't look good at all. All right, against bad teams, against bad opponents. Okay, LSU, you only gave up 20 points. We gave up 45 points to Ole Miss. All right. Like against Auburn, you don't score for 3 quarters. Not you don't score a lot. You don't score at all. You don't get first downs at all the entire game. Like, you barely beat these teams that aren't good. And then you get to say nobody believes in us. Wait a minute. We got an entire season of resume. You have all the best players. You have all the best coaches. You get the benefit of every benefit of being the brand in the SEC for 20 years. And you underperform the entire season, and then you get to play up this nobody believes in us card? What the hell is that, man? People only are talking about what we've seen for 12 games, and we've seen you win 11 of them, but we also see in most of those 11 games that you won, you look like crap.
Yeah. I'm with you. There's a reason why I picked Georgia in the ballgame. There was no world where I could see Alabama being able to hold Georgia to 0 sacks in this game. They changed up their offensive line, and I will tell you this. I did not believe it, but I talked to somebody that was a GA at Alabama just 2 seasons ago that is still tight with some of the guys that are on the staff there, support staff and whatnot, who told me prior to that Alabama had been gearing up for Georgia basically since the Ole Miss game, which made zero sense to me because that is not how I have been led to believe Nick Saban coaches. It is a game-to-game.
Well, it cost him the A&M game. It almost cost him the Auburn game, and it should have cost him the LSU game, which means he never sees Georgia at all.
Right. I mean, it almost cost the Arkansas game. There was a lot.
Yeah. And you're talking against bad teams. Like, that's Auburn team with their backup quarterback and no good skill players outside of Tank. Like, that's an LSU team that is a complete shit show.
So I did not buy that. And yet, when they came out, really in the second quarter, they started to get a feel for what Georgia was doing and whatnot. At that point, it all made perfect sense at that point. I could not believe it. Alabama had 3 sacks. Georgia had 0. 115 rushing yards for Alabama. Like, they outrushed Georgia in this game. Now, part of that is because Georgia got down, so they had to throw the ball. Let's talk about Stetson Bennett. You know, that was a question coming into this game. I thought that Stetson had looked significantly better this season than he did last season. He was not prepared to be the starting quarterback last season. And he has had multiple games. 10 games of being the starter this year?
Yeah.
And JT Daniels, of course, had been dealing with injuries basically all year. So yesterday, 29 out of 48, 340 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. By the way, Brock Bowers, that tight end, best tight end in the country. And he's not even a finalist for the award. Like, I don't understand it. He had 10 receptions for 139 yards and 1 touchdown. This, Casey keeps coming in with, this was rigged, Georgia gave him the game, da-da-da-da-da. I don't think so. I don't think that was it. Alabama looked like they were really, really ready for what Georgia had. And Georgia looked like they had no idea what to do with what Alabama brought at them. And I don't think Alabama did anything way different necessarily. I wonder if Georgia had really played anybody that has the kind of speed at receiver that Alabama does. And it's not just receivers, right? It's tight ends. It's the running backs. It's whoever, right? I was shocked.
Where was this in the Iron Bowl?
You got me. I got no. They couldn't protect.
Where was this 2 weeks before that when they played LSU?
What do you want me to say? I was with you. Like,
but this doesn't make any sense. And all these people saying I'm a hater. Yeah, I don't like Alabama. Yes, I hate on Alabama. You're not answering my question, guys. How do you get to be shitty and then play the victim?
Oh,
no, that's not a hater. That's not a hater's take. I'm asking a question. How does that make me a hater? Asking a fucking question. Answer the question.
What I was telling you beforehand is there's videos at the post-game press conference of Bryce Young when Saban did his whole, I would like to thank the media.
I saw the videos. So everybody saw the videos, Gary.
Which is exactly right. Like, Saban does not like the media. He's got certain guys that he likes, but this was never, I mean, it's not that. Gary Lewis jumped in. Alabama outcoached Georgia by a zillion country miles. Playing from ahead all year hurt Georgia in a pressure situation. Now, we did bring that up a little bit.
We are gonna now have to go back and look, and I'm curious to see how Georgia plays in the playoffs. We are going to have to re-examine Georgia's entire resume, and we want to use the word fraud. I've heard people use the word fraud when talking about Edo the last couple of years. I've heard people use the word fraud with Arkansas this year, which I thought was strange. We need to look at this Georgia team and think, if they play anybody in this playoff and get beat,
should we be surprised?
To re-examine the entire season.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. Everybody thought that Georgia's defense was lights out, whatever. They gave up only 86 points for the entire year. And in this one game, they gave up 41. Like, now, 34 of that is offensive, right? Because Stetson Bennett threw a pick six.
Yeah.
But regardless, 86 points total scored against Georgia this season, and they gave up 41. Like, that's bananas. Their average score that they gave up per game was 6.1. Today it's like 9.3. Like, it jumped 3 points from one game. That is insane. I don't know what to make of this. I feel like everything that I have watched, I'll tell you another game that did that to me was the Northern Illinois Kent State game. Now we'll get to that later on down the line, but I will admit this. I had a lot of fun watching this. I lost my bet. I lost some money, but emotional hedge, I guess, because I didn't mind losing that to be able to watch this. Now, we'll see if we get to see this game again. It could be completely different. I don't think the power ratings changed that much based off of yesterday, but I do know this, that Georgia secondary is questionable. I don't know that they can play press man. I know Cincinnati can play that. Bud Elliott was talking about that on the Cover 3 podcast, and we've seen Cincy do that all year. When they go up against the passing offense.
And Michigan can play that because we saw them do that against Ohio State.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. There's just because Alabama won this game does not necessarily mean that they are equipped to be able to win a national title. But they certainly handle
it. If they play like they did yesterday, then they're the best team in the country.
Oh, yeah, they can beat
anybody. The problem is that is like the second time they've played that well all year.
Yeah,
like they haven't played that well all year except for maybe against Ole Miss.
Yes, the two biggest games of the year that they really wanted to prep for. Ole Miss embarrassed them last year, so of course they were prepped up for that one. And they looked like crap for weeks leading into Ole Miss. And then they looked like crap for weeks leading into Georgia. And then they put on that performance. It's a little strange. This is not the Nick Saban kind of coaching that I'm used to, but it is what it is. Paul Riggs jumped in. Georgia played a weak schedule. Yeah, Danny Cannell tweeted yesterday and said, what is Georgia's best win on the season? And it's either Kentucky or Clemson.
Probably. Clemson's not a good win, Gary, and we know that.
I know.
Like, we've seen that, but that's not it.
I mean, is it Tennessee? Like, because they kind of routed Tennessee.
But it didn't matter. Like, at Tennessee or at Auburn was what I was going to say, because both those were on the road.
Yeah, both were on the road, and Auburn still had Bo Nix at that point.
And Auburn was playing with Bo Nix, and Auburn was playing really well. I guess they were playing pretty well. It was after the Georgia game when Auburn kind of took off.
Yeah, yeah.
For about a 3 or 4 game stretch.
Yeah, they beat Arkansas, and they beat Ole Miss, and then they ran
into beat LSU.
Yeah,
they beat LSU. No, yeah, they went on.
LSU was before the Georgia game. So
that's right. They were. That's right. That's right.
So yeah, Bryce Young. I think that pretty much cements the Heisman, right?
Like, yeah. Oh no, totally.
Before that, I wasn't sure. He was a massive betting favorite, like -225 heading into the weekend.
But hang on, now that's not a massive betting favorite going into championship weekend. The last like five years, Gary, going into championship weekend, the betting favorite was -2,000 or more. We knew who the champion was. We knew who the Heisman was going to be the last 5 years.
Well, I don't know about last year. I think last year was a little up in the
air. Well, maybe not last year, but all the years before that, where it was a quarterback and it was a runaway. Baker was that way. Lamar was that way. Like all of I'm going back a while. Like
Kyler Murray and Tua was a little questionable up until that last weekend, because Tua was a big favorite, and then he got knocked out of that Georgia game. I would imagine Bryce probably knocked that thing out. So that'll be the first Alabama quarterback to win a Heisman. So they've had a wide receiver and two running backs, and now a quarterback. Let's jump off of that. Let's jump into the Big 12. I think we spent long enough on the SEC. This is the other one that was a tight ball game. Baylor 21, Oklahoma State 16. Running back Jaylen Warren was out for this game. Quarterback Jerry Bohannon was out for this game. I think those two kind of washed each other out. Blake, how do you say his name? Chapin?
Are you talking about the quarterback?
So I think like 23 out of 28, 180 yards, three touchdowns.
He played almost the entire second half without being able to throw the football.
Yeah.
If you can look at the splits, I'm going to bet that like 25 of those 28 passes were all before he got hurt.
He had 17 straight completions in this game. Ended up 23 out of 28, and obviously, not right at some point. Baylor only had 242 yards of total offense. They only had 4 yards per play. So Jim Knowles' defense did what they were supposed to do in the second half. Spencer Sanders, we've talked about him for years and whether or not he would be able to step up in a big, big situation, and he did it last week against Oklahoma. And this week, no touchdowns, four interceptions.
Oklahoma don't play defense. And this is Dave Aranda a second time around. I told you this was going to be a bloodbath for Oklahoma State to find a way into the end zone.
No, you were right.
I didn't get a lot right this weekend, and that's fine. But this game, I knew, I didn't know how Baylor was going to perform. I didn't know that. I knew Oklahoma State wasn't going to score easily.
You were dead on. The three touchdown drives by Baylor, by the way, 3 plays, 11 yards, 3 plays, 37 yards, 9 plays, 47 yards, all three short fields, all.
He trusted his defense to get the ball, to take it away. And they did it. They did it over and over and over again. Yep. When they weren't taking the ball away, they were laying the lumber. This is the best defensive performance we saw all weekend. Michigan did was impressive, but they were playing an offense that just isn't good at football at all. Like I think Michigan's really good. This is not a takeaway on them. Holding Iowa to three. That's more about you not letting them score a defensive touchdown, because they didn't score offensive touchdowns a lot this year.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, Wisconsin held them to 7 points. So Oklahoma State had 2 field goals from the 6-yard line, 1 from the 3. They were stopped at the 1-inch line. There were 2 fourth-quarter defensive stands inside the 10-yard line for Baylor. Jim Knowles in that defense held Baylor scoreless in the second half. But
they were one-dimensional. We talked about this.
Incredibly one-dimensional. Yes.
They couldn't throw the football. Their quarterback was – I found it strange that they would rather be their second – string quarterback who can't throw over a third string quarterback that at least gives you a chance to throw the football. Now, I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know anything about the third string quarterback. He could literally just be a walk-on dude that's just not a quarterback. I mean, that could be an emergency situation only. But up against Jim Knowles, up against this Oklahoma State defense, if you go one-dimensional, you have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. This wasn't super surprising, I don't guess, because Gary Lewis jumped in, good Sanders, bad Sanders. Yeah, that's 100% what it is. 100% what it is.
Yeah, but if you look at all the times he was really good this year, they were against teams that just play trash defense.
Yes.
And anytime he played a team, like this is not a he's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. This is a if he plays somebody that doesn't press him, he can pick you apart, and he's got wheels good enough to make some moves with his legs. If you bottle him up and hit him a couple of times, it's over. Like, it's bad Sanders the rest of the day.
My thought process on this, why I took Oklahoma State, was I thought that that defense was going to create opportunities and maybe score themselves on Baylor, especially against the second-string quarterback that Jim Knowles already had film on, right? Like, we've seen this. They did it against Texas Tech. Texas Tech played lights out, beat up on Iowa State, who has a pretty good defense, but then as soon as you get film on them, Oklahoma State held them scoreless. Like, did not let them move the ball at all. And no, I understand Texas Tech way different than Baylor. I get that. But, I
think this Baylor team is incredibly well coached. I hope they can keep that staff together. I really do.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Aranda do well there for a while. We got into this debate with some of our other buddies in a group chat we got. And those guys all hate Baylor. I understand that they have different reasons for hating Baylor. I think Baylor might be the best job in the Big 12.
It's possible. It's 100% possible.
I'm going to tell you this. The second best job in the Big 12 is probably Houston now.
I mean, Cincy might have something to say about that.
No, talking about where they are as a program, okay? Because if Luke Fickell left Cincinnati, I don't know that Cincinnati stays what they are. I think they're good. I don't think they fall to the abyss. But I think that is a product of they've hired really well and they've done a good job, but that's a Luke Fickell thing. I think Houston's great no matter who's the head coach because of the city, the resources, the recruiting talent around them. That's where it all comes from.
I mean, I see where you're coming from.
If Luke Fickell and Dana Holgorsen swap places, would you think Houston's a better job or Cincinnati's a better job?
Man, Houston's probably the better job.
Yeah, that's the answer then.
Overall,
that gives you the answer.
Probably the better job. Cincinnati has had sustained success. The only coach that they did not hit on was Tommy Tuberville towards the end of his career. But they've had success with basically everybody that came through there. Like, Cincy's always been pretty damn good. You know, it's been a while since they've dominated a conference the way that they are right now, and that is definitely a Fickell thing. But yeah, I'm with you. That actually leads us into the AAC. Let's talk about that. Cincy 35, yeah. Houston 20. And, you know, not super surprising here. Big note on this post-game win expectancy, by the way, Cincy 100%. Cincinnati was 0 of 8 on third down. 0 of 8.
Now, well, that means they only had 8 third downs.
That's what I was going to say. They only had 8
third
downs.
That's what I hear when you say that. You hear a lot of people hear that, I'm looking at the 8 thinking, you just played a 60-minute football game against a really good opponent and you only had 8 third downs.
Yes. Yes, Cincinnati only ran 45 plays. Jeff Fogel went through all the different numbers on this. They won yards per play 8.9 to 4.6. They rushed 210 to 86 yards. They won drive points 28 to 14. That's 60-plus yard drives, which is easy to do when you've got a 79-yard run, a 45-yard touchdown run, a 40-something yard pass. Like, they hit explosive plays like it was going out of style. Houston has a pretty good defensive line, but they were able to negate that. They're very aggressive, and they just attacked them. Like, when
Houston is a really good football team, man. Luke Fickell has that machine rolling. This is the best game Desmond has played, maybe not all year, but pretty much all year.
I think he was good. He was 11 out of 17 for 190 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, when he had to make
throws, man, he made some. He made some dynamite throws. When you're killing a team like that, yeah, you just keep bludgeoning them to death. But when he wanted to take the top off the defense and he wanted to make a throw, he was able to make it all day.
Yeah. Jerome Ford, 18 attempts for 187 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Ford was unbelievable. Getting him back is so big. We talked about how so many people criticize Cincinnati for losing these close games. What do you think these other teams would do if they lost their best offensive skill weapon in the middle of the season? For like a 4-game stretch. Yeah. Alabama was already playing close games, barely beating people. Like Michigan was still in dogfights. All these other teams were still in dogfights with other teams. Take away their best offensive skill player, And they lose a lot of those games. The fact that Cincinnati didn't lose any of those games, and then when they get him back, what that machine looks like, they look like before they lost him. This is why they were holding them back, because they weren't beating people bad enough, which is so dumb to me.
Yeah. No, I think obviously it played itself out the way that we discussed, because they will be in the top four.
The show is starting in
5 minutes. So I've got it pulled up. We'll talk about it when it goes live. But yeah, looking at this, like they got to be able to sustain drives going forward, whether it's against Alabama or whoever they end up playing. But they got the skill players, they got the athletes, and on defense, Gary Lewis jumped in, or Casey Sauce Gardner, number one cornerback in college football. Maybe so. And Gary Lewis, maybe, by the way, jumped in and said, "Look at Oklahoma State without the running back Warren." Yeah, without Jalen Warren.
Yeah,
that offense could not get it going.
This is what happens. Everybody else loses their best skill player, and they fall mightily. Cincinnati struggled. They were in dogfights. They didn't lose any of them. The defense stepped up. Other guys stepped up. That offensive line stepped up big. There's a reason they're in the top four. They deserve to be in the conversation with Michigan, who I think is one of the most complete teams I've seen in a long time. Wham with Alabama and Georgia, who we all have watched and seen and believe are our complete football teams. Like, they deserve to be in this. This is not, oh, the little guy's finally getting a chance. No, no one's giving them a chance. They have earned this. They've taken it. They've ripped it away from people who don't want to give it to them.
Cincinnati, by the way, only ran 45 plays to 73 for Houston. Since he had 8 sacks, they did not turn the ball over. And Cincinnati was able to put up the 35 points there and 400 yards of total offense in only 19 minutes and 41 seconds time of possession.
That's right.
Yeah.
That defense was on the field for a long time, and they didn't get tired. That's scary. Yes. You're one of these other three teams that got to play them, you got to look and say, am I going to be the Power 5 team that loses to the little school? Because that defense beat on the field. The reason I liked Houston in this game was simply I thought the back door was left open, 10.5, and ended up closing it like 11.5. I thought the back door is going to be open for this cover. And with Cincinnati's defense being on the field the entire game, three full quarters worth of Cincinnati's defense being on the field almost, I thought it's only time before Houston makes a play to get something in the end zone to get the back door in, and they couldn't do it. Cincinnati's defense didn't get tired. They didn't look exhausted. And at the end of the game, they were still blitzing and getting to the quarterback and getting tackles in the backfield and pressure on the offense like they were in the first half.
That was impressive. Were very impressed with the atmosphere. Said it was the loudest they've ever heard it. That third quarter run that they had where they scored 3 touchdowns at just back-to-back-to-back, that was the backbreaker for Houston. You know,
this is why we have to get to 12, and this is why first round games have to be played on home field advantage.
Oh yeah, no, I'm totally with that.
If you saw what Cincinnati did, now the atmosphere in Atlanta, but you have two monster schools, two monster fan bases. The atmosphere in Jerry World was unbelievable. The atmosphere in Indianapolis, you've got Michigan who hasn't made it in forever, and so every Michigan fan alive is fighting to get tickets to that game. Yes, you had great atmospheres, but put those games on the home field advantage, and it's a different world.
It's a whole different ballgame.
I don't know that Baylor wins that game if it's at Oklahoma State.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%.
If it's in Stillwater, Baylor's not taking that game. That's a different outcome.
It is. Home field mattered this year. Like, you can look at numbers and say that it didn't and whatnot, but like in big games.
In big games, it did. Across the board, it's anecdotal.
Yeah.
But in big moments and big games, yeah, it was important.
Now, you have certainly got that right. Gary Lewis, Chris B., about on-campus first-round CFP games, yes. Yes. Yeah, 100%.
When I saw the Cincinnati game, and when hell, last year, was it last year? 2 years ago, sorry. I went to the Memphis-Cincinnati game here in Memphis. It was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. And that's little old Memphis.
You got that right.
Say goodbye
to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Big Ten title game, Michigan 42, Iowa 3. We obviously don't have to spend long on this one. Numbers here. Michigan won yardage at 461 to 279. They won yards per play, 7.4 to 3.9. They won thirds downs, 40 to 26%. Drive points, 28 to 3. And rushing, 211 to 104. Iowa won turnovers. Not shocking.
I was just about to say, Iowa needed to score on turnovers, and that's what Michigan did that was best, which is when they turned the ball over, which we all knew they would, you got to tackle those guys. You can't let them score because their offense ain't beating you.
Yes.
And they did it.
Now, you're 100% right.
Because this game was tight for a while. This game was
14 real to 3. Tight. It was 14-3 at the half, and then it was only 21-3 at the end of the third quarter.
I was about to say, going into the fourth quarter, it was tight.
Yeah, it was as tight as 21-3 can be. But this was exactly what
we
said.
Then it got ugly.
Right? We said, or I don't remember if you agreed with me or not, but this was Iowa is a poor man's Michigan. Right?
Yes. Everything Michigan does, Iowa does probably 30% less. Well, offensively, I think they're about 80% less.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time.
Hang on. At what point do we look at Ferentz and say, your son doesn't get to coach the offense anymore? Because this is bad. This is real bad.
I don't know.
I do think that would be the thing that would make him want to just retire.
Yeah, probably
If you told him he had to fire his son, he would just retire.
But found a way again to win 10 ball games with that offense.
That defense is really good, and it's a shame for those defensive players to have to play like that.
Yes. Yes, I don't
like. I'm gonna tell you this. Like, I believe in the one team, one heartbeat philosophy. But man, I've watched some games this year in college and in the pros where if I was a defensive player, I'd be getting some ass in those locker rooms with some of those offensive guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're out here killing ourselves, making hellacious plays, Herculean effort to get you the ball back, and you just give it away to the other team like it's nothing constantly.
Oh, it would drive me insane. Drive me insane.
I have learned this year, the older I've gotten, the less of a team player I am. And if I'm doing my job and you're making my job 100 times worse, somebody's going through a window.
I love it. The CUSA conference title, UTSA won 49-41 over Western Kentucky.
I love the Roadrunners, man. This team has been awesome all year long.
I forget what the quote was, but he went for fourth down a couple of times where it was a little iffy. You know, maybe we shouldn't. He said, I just signed a 10-year contract. Like, they can't pay me out right now. Like, I can do whatever I want to right now.
I can do whatever I want. But I'll tell you this. I think he needed some of those fourth downs.
He did.
This is a tight game. This is a close game. It's a good game.
It was.
I was real happy for the Roadrunners to pull this out. Finish this season strong.
UTSA closed as a 3.5-point dog. They opened as a 1.5-point favorite. They won rushing yards 304-9. Now, Western Kentucky doesn't even try.
And rushing college football still just won't fix their stats. Those are all sacks because you don't run the football ever.
Yeah, they ran the ball, a total of 16 times for -9 yards. Two of them were sacks that cost them 35 yards.
That kills you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because Zapp, that's taken off a running game.
7 attempts for 5 total yards for him. The running back, 4 attempts for 15 yards. But Bailey Zapp, man, he threw this thing 36 out of 59, 577 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. They were down 28-13 at the half, and then came out 2 just idiotic plays that led them to a 42-13 hole, and then they started coming back.
This ball game.
But it got tight. It got real tight.
But at some point in time, you're playing against the clock, right? Like, this is what everyone said in that Patriots-Falcons game. Like, the coaching disaster that was, because you're not even playing against an opponent now. Like, you're just playing against time. And if you can't manage that well enough, you don't deserve to be coaching.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Gary Lewis said, trivia, star Utah tailback was buried on Cincinnati running back depth chart around 2018. I don't know which one that is. I will tell you this. Cincinnati's star running back, Jerome Ford, was buried on Alabama's depth chart for a long time. Like, he just got to get the opportunity. Like, you don't know which one of these guys is going to end up, you know.
This is why if you're a five-star guy and you're going to play behind four or five other five-star guys in front of you, stop doing that.
Yeah.
Go somewhere where you can play, even if it's a small school. Winning a ring and never touching the field has got to be a sad, sad life.
Yes. Paul Riggs jumped in. Chris, in my 68 years, this is the first time hearing what you said. First man through the wall gets bloody. I will use it. That's a good thing.
That's not a quote from me. That's a quote actually from Billy Beane. It's a baseball when he started doing the sabermetrics things. There were sabermetric guys out in the world trying to get baseball to convert to it, and no GM would do it. Billy Beane was backed up against the wall. He had no choice. When it started going badly early, he immediately tried to rally his troops and get the people in his locker room to understand, first guy through the wall always gets bloody. We're going to catch negative heat. We have to keep doing it, though. It's the only way to keep winning. It's the only way to beat the bad guys is you've got to turn the odds around on the house.
Yes, yes. Casey jumped in and said, Bama was even rigged to beat Gonzaga last night. Yeah.
As if Alabama people don't have enough in their life.
I was spent by the time that game was done. I'd still watched all of Pitt and Wake Forest, and I had Michigan and Iowa on the other screen. But it was a good day to be an Alabama fan. The Sun Belt Conference Championship game. Billy Napier goes out a winner. Not bad. 24-16 over App State is Louisiana, the new champion. The postgame win expectancy was only 52%. Not super surprising that this was a tight game. Louisiana plays a lot of tight games, but as I said on the BetUS show, and as I have said multiple times, Louisiana plays up or down to the level of competition. They do it every weekend. Like, it's
so tough. Like, I think I might have lost more money on Louisiana this year than ever, any one single team ever. Is I could not figure them out. I mean, this is one of those where every time I call heads, it lands on tails. If I switch it up, it lands on heads. It didn't matter. This team, they modeled this year of inconsistency. Like, it's just weird.
They won their championship. They played their best football against the best teams. And then they played like crap and just struggled to get by against Arkansas.
Barely beat bad teams.
Like Louisiana Monroe. They did this over and over. But I've seen it for 2 years with this team. Like, I know what they do. This is very much – you know what it reminds me of?
Can Napier bring that to Florida?
I really, really need that
same attitude in Florida.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. I don't think Florida fans will appreciate this, but this is very much what Jim McElwain used to do, right?
Yeah. Jim McElwain won 3 SEC titles, went to 3 SEC championships in a row and got fired.
Yeah, because he messed around.
He didn't win enough, and he didn't win bad enough. Yeah. He dicked around with bad teams, and they won those games, a lot of them. That's how you get to SEC championship games. But they don't cover, they don't win big, they don't get a lot of publicity because you're in tight games with bad football teams.
Yes. So they were 2.5-point dogs at closing. They upset App State 24-16. They won yardage 398 to 290. They won yards.
It was a fun game.
I had it on one of the screens. It was a good game. It was a well-coached game on both sides, and it was tight. It was a tight
game. I was watching all eyes on the Big 12 game, but I had it on. I was looking over a lot. It was a good game.
No, it was exactly
what I thought. I think those two teams, with the coaching staffs and the players that they have this season, those two teams might mirror each other more than any conference rival I've seen in a long time.
Yes.
I think they're put together very much alike.
That Louisiana defense, they shut down Chase Bryce. They did not get the turnovers that you would maybe somewhat expect out of Chase Bryce, but held him to 12 out of 30 passing for 119 yards and only one touchdown.
Yeah, I was about to say, not a lot of points and not a lot of yards, not a lot of first downs. I mean, it was a fight for App.
You got that right. Speaking of a game that was not a fight, Utah 38, Oregon 10 in the Pac-12 title, which, by the way, was phenomenal in Las Vegas. Had over 55,000 people there. It wasn't full by any stretch of the imagination, but it's way better than when Utah played against Washington and Santa Clara in front of like 10,000 people, and that's what they said. Like, it may have been a few thousand people there. Like, nobody in Santa Clara, California.
Hundreds of people were at them in San Francisco.
Yes. And
and most of those people aren't sports fans. Most of those people were corporate folks that got tickets because the sponsorships just had to give away tickets to put butts in the seats.
Utah showed out in this one. Yep. They won the two games combined against Oregon this year, 76-17. The point spread was 3 in both of those games. I mean, this is just unbelievable. How did this Oregon team beat Ohio State? Like,
that's a question I've got. My bigger question, we're going back to the very start of the show, okay? Why is everybody so in love with Mario? I'm not saying Mario is a trash coach. I think Mario is a really good coach. Why is he a guy that you would break the bank and mortgage the future for?
He is a big-time recruiter, so that's the biggest thing, is he can get players. Now, this year, obviously, they had a ton of injuries. It is tough to gauge exactly what Oregon was, but
What about last year? I mean, what about the year before that?
Well, last year they went 3-2 and they won the Pac-12. Like, with the win over USC, they won the Pac-12 the year before that.
I guess last year's a COVID year. I'm not going to blame that.
Before that they won the Pac-12 and then won the Rose Bowl. Like,
I understand that, but they weren't impressive.
No.
I mean, that's like the worst. That 2019 year was the worst Pac-12 season we may have ever seen.
Oh, that's Gary Lewis jumped in. Oregon had a Verdell against Ohio State. That does play a lot into it. Gary Lewis said Mario is a recruiter. That's the biggest thing. And it is. It absolutely is.
Okay. Well, Ed was a recruiter as well. And that's always fun for a little bit. But at some point in time, I've told you this, your head coach has to be able to get you out of problems.
Yes.
He has to be able to solve problems, or else he's just standing on the sidelines cheerleading. That's all he's doing.
Yes.
Once the game kicks off and recruiting is over, and the season starts, the most important time of the year where the games are actually being played, I need my head coach to do something. You can hire a ton of great recruiters. Look what Jim Harbaugh just did. You can go out and you could hire young guys to be hot shot recruiters. I need problem solvers that are on the field coaches. And I damn sure need the highest paid guy to be a problem solver. He either needs to be the architect of the offense or the architect of the defense. He doesn't have to be the play caller, but he needs to be able to say, things aren't going right. I'm taking over steering the ship.
It's what Cristobal has done. You look, and the defense did not play all that well overall this season. And that's because Andy Avalos left to go and take the Boise State job. But
Mario's supposed to be the defensive guy.
No, Mario's an offensive line guy. Like, Mario's never.
I thought he was a defensive guy.
Ew, he's been an offensive line coach forever. And he was a head coach at FIU. Like, he's not a defensive guy, but he builds strong defenses. So,
well, that's why I got that impression, because he does build he does recruit tough players. He does build a tough style football team that I like watching. I wouldn't break the bank for this guy, though. Like, I wouldn't leave my coach in limbo unless I can get Mario. Like,
right?
No. Like, if I could get Mario, is he better than Manny? Yeah, but
much better? Like, is he worth
I'm not ruining a relationship with a guy that I've got that I might end up having to live with for at least another year for this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Gary Lewis jumped in. Cristobal is way overrated. I mean, maybe. Like, I don't know. Like, he can recruit, and if he's got the right coordinators, then yes. But that's very much a Dabo thing, and it was a Coach O thing, et cetera. Like, you've got to have other guys. But he's not going to have Joe Moorhead with him.
That's a Nick Saban thing. Yep. That's a Jim Harbaugh thing. That's a Kirby Smart thing. Like, there's no coaches out here not doing it by themselves.
Yes,
like,
agree.
All the successful coaches have great staffs, and you have to be able to hire good people. the problem is when there's no doubt in my mind that if Nick Saban's DC gets hit by a bus tomorrow, like Saban can step in and take care of the defense. Yes. Like he can fix all their problems. All right. Kirby, the same thing. Like I believe those guys are good enough to take over. I don't believe Dabo is smart enough to take over the defense now that Venables is gone. I just don't.
No, okay? I agree with you. I agree.
Like, there's no doubt Jeff Lebby is a great coach, offensive coordinator, offensive play caller. If he leaves, there's no question that I don't think that offense is going to slow down one lick because it's Lane's off. Lane is the architect.
Yeah.
I trust him to fix the problems.
Yes. No, they.
This is Jason Garrett in college football, clapping your hands and cheering on the team during the most important times of the game. That's not what you want.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you. Let's see. Oh, coming up next, they're announcing the teams in just a little bit. Staying on this Utah game, they won yardage 361 to 221 even after Oregon's late 90-yard touchdown drive, which, think about that. Until that 90-yard touchdown drive, they had held them to like 130 yards of offense. Like, Utah smashed them in a way that nobody else seemed to be able to do this season. Like, it was unbelievable. Third downs, they won 46 to 33%. They won rushing 191 to 74. Drive points 20 to 7. Like, this was a whipping. Like, Utah did get help by an interception return for a touchdown. But that's not the interception that really drove me crazy. The one on the sideline, Anthony Brown, what are you doing? Like, towards the end of the second quarter.
Just complete give up on the play, throwing the ball to the other team, not even paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Now, that's college football, though. Like, this is 19-year-old kids, 20-year-old kid that didn't have a lot of experience.
There were Oregon fans that were pushing for Dylan Gabriel, for Spencer Rattler, for da-da-da-da. Well,
Dylan, about 45 minutes away from our house right now.
Yes, he is down in Oxford. But, I mean, he could end up in Oklahoma if Caleb decides to leave it. Because, remember, Lebby was the thing that kind of – but we'll see.
No. No,
who knows?
No, he's going to Lane.
Pitt, 45, Wake Forest, 21. Another one that we don't have to spend a ton of time on. Pitt's postgame win expectancy was 95%. Wake, with all of the interceptions, what in the hell, Sam Hartman, 4 interceptions. And that was basically the ball game. Like, Pitt and their defense.
Damn. The ball game of this game was we got 3 points scored in 2.5 quarters. From these two teams?
What we got. It was 21-14 at the end of the first quarter, and then Wake Forest did not score again. But Pitt, 14 points in the first quarter, 10 points in the second quarter, 7 in the third, and then 14 in the fourth. I mean, they scored as they went along.
All those points of their last 3 touchdowns were all defensive touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's not them scoring. That's not offensive football being awesome. Hey. This was supposed to be offensive football being awesome.
Yeah,
It was not that. For the first quarter, it was absolutely that.
So
of the game, it was like a defensive juggernaut game. What the hell are we doing? We didn't sign up for that shit. I wanted to watch that. I watched the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I want to see 5 turnovers and defensive scores and no offensive points. I watched the Big Ten. I come to the ACC. AAC, whatever. ACC. That's right. I had it right the first time. Because I want to see some points.
The field in Charlotte, I have been told, like, nobody scores there for whatever reason, right?
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. But I had been told before the game that, hey, it's going to be, like, this will be an under. And I was like, what? That makes no sense. Like, just because of the field? Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. But that's what I was told. And it ended up playing out right. So
that doesn't sound right. I need to hear some logic. I need to see some science. Like, I need more information than somebody just saying, "Oh, well, that people don't score in Charlotte." Like, it's like a black hole. It's like a sinkhole that just doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, so what? One thing that I was told is that the wind blows, like, it makes it incredibly difficult to throw the football. But that's just weird. Gary Lewis, by the way, jumped in and said Narduzzi is Big Ten. So
he normally is. This season he has not been. This season they've hung 40 on everybody.
Yeah, they
and played
have.
No defense, by the way. No defense at all.
What did you think about Kenny Pickett and the fake slide early?
Okay, so it looks really cool and it's a great trick, but I'm going to tell you that can't be allowed. It just like that has to be I'm not saying it should be a penalty, but as soon as you look like you're giving yourself up, if we're going to protect the quarterbacks the way we have this for the last 5-6 years, as soon as you look like you're giving yourself up, you've given yourself up and you're down right there.
Yes, you cannot fake that because it's not fair to the defense.
Like, it does look cool, but if a defensive player says you tricked me once and the next time I just plow into you, then because I'm going to tell you, like, let me go back to another Patriot Super Bowl. The Seahawks Super Bowl where the ball is flipped up in the air and Lockett catches it laying on the ground, there's a Patriot player running in from the side about to lay the boom, and then he sees the ball's like, okay, Lockett doesn't have it, and he jumps out. He hurdles Lockett instead of doing it, and then the ball falls on Lockett. He's like, man, if I plow into him, I'm guaranteed a 15-yard penalty, and they get a first down. Like there's – it's a no-win situation. The ball just happened to fall on his chest. But if I break that up, then I'm definitely getting the 15 yarder and they get the first down. It's a lose situation all the way around for defensive guys so much. If you're gonna fake the slide as soon as you look like you're giving yourself up, we're just gonna call you down right there. Yeah. I don't think it should be a penalty. I don't think it's just call you down right there. That's
yes.
It does look cool. It was awesome. It was fun to watch. You get one because we didn't know that a human being could do this.
Yes.
Now that we know that people are capable of doing this, we're gonna call it down.
Yeah,
we're going to call it down every time.
The MAC championship game, Northern Illinois 41, Kent State 23, and props to Coach Hammock in that bunch. The Huskies, I'm telling you, they held the ball for 40 minutes, and that offense for Kent State is not scary when they're on the bench. I tweeted that out yesterday.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, the biggest thing is if you keep them on the sidelines.
The numbers on this, NIU won third downs 57-44%. They won rushing 266-195. They won drive points 21-20, and they won turnovers 2-1. Kansas State also had 2 fourth down failures. I looked at this. I was shocked. Like, Kent State didn't get going really until they were already down 24-3. In the first half, Kent State held the ball for like 7 minutes. Like, it was absurd. Northern Illinois was helped by a pick six in this game, but regardless, like, the game plan was perfect. And this is the second youngest team in all of FBS. Like, they got a ton of first and second year guys that you did not expect a lot from, right? The recruiting rankings did not exactly hit these dudes, so that's the way that goes. And finally, we'll close with this because they're about to do the top six here. The MWC Mountain West Championship game, we have got Utah State winning 46-13. San Diego State had a bunch of dudes out. I was shocked. Like, I wasn't like shocked that Utah State found a way to win. I was shocked at the way that this went. San Diego State runs a lot of their offense through their tight ends. All three of their top tight ends were out for this game due to certain protocols, as we will say them. It's ridiculous. Casey said, poor Kyle, I knew Northern Illinois was a lock. No one bet on them. Everyone was on Kent State, including futures. Same with Utah State. I don't think anybody saw Utah State going from, like, one win last season to this.
Yeah, like, nobody saw Utah State at all. This was shocking. I didn't see this ass thrashing at all.
No, same here. This was – look, Utah State just demolished them. Like, just demolished them. They Blake had a Anderson's ton of short amazing, drives.
Right? Like, yes. What a story for Blake Anderson.
What a story indeed. Just unbelievable. Cheers to Utah State. We don't even have to get into numbers. This was just bloodshed. This was ugly. And finally, let's jump into it. Ohio State is in at number 6. Notre Dame is number 5. Somehow Baylor did not move up to number 6. I got no idea. Like, how could you not?
Why would they with Ohio State being there? Come on, man. They're gonna protect the brand. These people are the most corrupt sons of bitches the world has ever seen.
It's
right?
Just ridiculous. Like,
there are people that run FIFA that look at the NCAA and be like, damn, y'all got some balls, man. Y'all got some balls.
Yeah.
We at least tried to hide some of this shit with some, like, you know, billionaire oil money from the Middle East, but damn, you guys don't even hide it.
Casey jumped in and said, Notre Dame will smoke Ohio State. Notre Dame won't play Ohio State. Like, it'll be Ohio State and Utah, and that could be very interesting because Utah plays a lot like Michigan.
I was just about to say, I'd be real curious to see the line on that game because I bet Ohio State gets a big number.
Oh, probably so. But I will double
digits.
You this.
Do you think they get double digits?
I will bet Utah. 10? No, I bet it's. I bet it's like 7-8.
Okay, I was thinking. I was guess. Thinking. I was thinking more than 7, maybe 10.
No, similar. Similar to 10. to the Michigan line. Yeah. But I think I'll be betting Utah. I guarantee you that.
Oh well, yeah. I don't care the number. I think they might be the better team.
So Cincinnati gets in as the 4 seed. So we're good there. Now we just wait to see, like, at Georgia, I would imagine, is 3. So we got to figure out, is Alabama or Michigan number 1 or number 2?
So, all right, while we're waiting on this, let's talk about this. Yeah. I actually think if I'm the college football committee, I want to see that SEC championship game again. I don't care that it just happened. It's not going to happen for another month. Let's let these two teams revamp and let's run it
let's
back.
Run it
I'd put them as the semifish. I would make them 2 and 3.
So
I would. And what you do to appease the rest of the football is you guarantee that you don't get an all-SEC championship game.
Yeah. No, that's – so TJ Reeves actually hit me up just 10 minutes before we did the show and was like, yeah, Alabama, Cincy, and Michigan, Georgia is going to be 2 fascinating games. It's going to be awesome. And I was like, eh, you know, there is a world where they don't – like they would prefer that the national championship not be an all-SEC final.
Well, I also think there's a world where they really want to try to get Michigan in that thing. And they think Michigan, Cincinnati, you got a chance. You got a chance to get Michigan there.
And, I mean, Michigan's got a chance to get there whether they're playing Georgia or whether they're playing
I completely agree. But if you're the people that run this thing, don't think of us. Think of the people that run this thing. If you're trying to manipulate the outcome, you don't care. Bama or Georgia are both going to bring the same amount of eyes. Bama, Georgia are both going to bring the same people to the party. All right. You probably would rather Georgia because of the Bama fatigue, but you don't really care.
Yeah.
Michigan's who you really want. And if you're the people that run this thing, you have this assumption
Let me dive in. Bama. So strength of schedule. Alabama 4th, Michigan 21st, strength of record, Alabama 1st, Michigan 2nd, and versus FPI top 40 teams, Michigan 5-1, Alabama 9-1. They're probably going to give this to Alabama, I would imagine.
Because I don't think they want to see the SEC game, but like I said, I think I would rather get that game. A, you know you're going to do a monster number.
Oh, yeah.
And B, then you've got the assuming factors. The betting favorite should be Michigan over Cincinnati. So the you've got that concept of getting Michigan to a national championship game.
Yeah. Gary Lewis jumped in. Ideal wish, force SEC teams to square off in first round. Hashtag yep. SEC fatigue. Yep. Casey said, Michigan scares me way more than Bama and Georgia. I mean, why? Like,
I do think there's a world where Michigan might be the best team in the country.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I know what we saw from Bama yesterday. I just understand that I've got 12 other games that says that that's not who they are all the time.
Agreed.
I assume they'll be that in a month because they'll have a month to get ready for their opponent. But I'm just saying we've got enough resume to say that hasn't been them for 12 games.
Agreed.
It was them for that game, but that's it.
That's if we're talking players, like that's it, both of those teams, Alabama and Georgia, both. And there it is, Alabama number 1. So, Bama against Cincinnati, probably in Dallas, I would imagine. And yeah, Michigan and Georgia will be in Miami. That's going to be a fun ball game. Jim Harbaugh against Kirby Smart. Man, I am excited about this. Casey said, yes, Cincy versus Bama, baby. Easy money. Bama are posers. I can't contradict any of that. Who knows?
I'll step in front of those two trains. I got no problem with that.
So, Alabama, number 1. Michigan 2. Georgia 3. Cincy 4. I mean, obviously, we don't have to break this down. We got a long time to do this. But, fascinating. Like Alabama against the first
predictable
G5.
To me. I mean, this is the most predictable playoff we've had in a long time after this week.
Yes. Yes. This was the easiest top 4 that we've had at the end of this.
But not just top 4. Like, I think everybody in the country had this ranking for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they thought this was going to be the ranking. I don't know that they had this ranking if they were honest with themselves.
Yeah.
But Like, if we're looking pure, so here's the thing.
They did
here's
just the thing announce, you got to look way, at. Bama, since he is Dallas, and Michigan, Georgia is in the Orange Bowl. Right. They just announced.
So here's like, if you're looking pure resume, like best loss is Georgia, but they didn't win their conference championship. So if conference championships has to matter, then Georgia has to be fourth. Okay. All right. If you're looking at best loss, then you have to put Cincinnati number one, and you still get Cincinnati, Georgia now.
Best win?
Best loss, because Cincinnati doesn't have a loss.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. I got you.
All right. Now, if you're looking at best win outside of Bama and Georgia, Bama probably has the worst loss of them all. Not probably. Bama does have the worst loss of them all. Like, it's not even close. But you know, so that would have them probably third if you were looking at pure resume and just breaking this thing down.
And so Cincinnati,
Georgia doesn't have a good win on the season at all.
No, Georgia, but like, they've got two top 25 wins, but I don't think they've got a single top 20 win. Alabama's got two top 10 wins, one of them top five, and that Ole Miss is number seven.
They were eight. I would imagine they'll move up
over Oklahoma State, but we'll see.
I would guess so too.
So you've got two top seven wins for Alabama. You've got Michigan with a big win over Ohio State, and they've got other like good wins.
Who do you think Ole Miss will play in the Sugar Bowl? Notre Dame?
Baylor.
Baylor, you think they'll definitely play Baylor?
Yeah, it's Big 12 versus SEC.
But Notre Dame has played in the Rose Bowl several times. How does that happen?
In the Sugar Bowl, you mean?
Sugar Bowl, I mean.
So this was actually a recent thing that was done like several years ago, that it was the Big 12 versus the SEC champions. And they did it much the same.
So I guess that's when the Big 12 champion makes it to the playoff, then they don't have to take the second.
Well, typically
they could take Notre Dame after that.
Yeah, you could take Notre Dame after that. Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm fine with that. I would have rather seen Ole Miss and Notre Dame, but
yeah, I'll agree.
I'm okay with that.
But it'll be Ole Miss against Baylor. So Lane Kiffin against Dave Aranda. That could be a really interesting matchup. Aside from that, I mean, like the Orange Bowl, like not the Miami playoff game, but the actual Orange Bowl that will be played after that, I think. That will be Pitt against probably Notre Dame.
Oh, I don't want to see that. Notre Dame's going to destroy Pitt.
So that's more than likely what that one will be. Peach Bowl.
This sucks.
I don't even know what the Peach Bowl might be.
We got to get rid of tie-ins. We just got to let these bowls, like, everybody gets an order. Okay, you get first pick, you get second pick, you get third pick, and you just draft two teams. Just build matchups. This is what we got to get to. We got to get rid of this tie-in bullshit.
So you figure Oklahoma State gets into one of these New Year's Six games? I would imagine they do.
Probably, because the people who run this need the Big 12 to still be seen as the Power 5 Big 12.
So if you got Oklahoma State playing in the if you've got them – yeah, you get Oklahoma State in the Peach Bowl, then you put them up against, I don't know, Michigan State? I mean, that would work, I guess. It's not a super sexy matchup, but the only other one might be BYU, but because there's no conference affiliation, I would imagine you'll probably just get Michigan State there. So, and Michigan State's ranked above BYU anyway, and I don't think that they're going to drop Oklahoma State super far. So, I mean, they're going to announce the bowl matchups.
All the rest of them will happen today.
It'll all happen today. So, Casey jumps in. Ritter versus Hutchinson for the title. It'd be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun. We'll see. Chris, is there anything else that we need to hit?
Nope.
All right. Let's get out of here. This has been a lot of fun. You guys, go over to BetUS. It's America's premier online sports book. What a fascinating time to be alive. What a great college football season. This is a lot of fun. I've enjoyed these. We won't be doing the Sunday recaps anymore. That sucks, at least for, you know, a while. But Chris, I got to tell you, this has been my favorite show that we do out of the entire week.
Always a good time.
I appreciate everybody. We appreciate everybody that jumps in the chat and whatnot every time. Gary Lewis, Trevor Shackelford, Casey, all you guys, Paul that jumped in earlier, like all of you guys, we appreciate you guys. Share the show out. Tell your friends. If you haven't already, like the video for us. We certainly would appreciate that. And with that, go to BetUS.com, go to WinningCuresEverything.com, check out the BetUS College Football Show and the Bookmaker Review College Football Show. The links are in the description for those. Leave a nice five-star review on the podcast. Hit us up on Twitter, all that good stuff. And we will be back again on Wednesday, same as usual, going over to the NFL games. So hopefully all of your NFL tickets cashed today, all that good stuff. But take care of yourself, take care of each other. And again, we hope that your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.